How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Guys, look who is here. Ben, come on, the best, number one. Before we get to it, this is the Knife Talk. This isn't Knife Talk. This is Full Blast Podcast. I'm all knife talked out. This is the Full Blast Podcast. And before we get into it with Ben, come on, let's take care of a little business. Number one is my friends at Broadbeck Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder, have a great Black Friday sale. Black Friday sale. If you're interested in Black Friday sales, go to broadbeckironworks.com and check out what they have. It's definitely worth it. They make great stuff, but that you have to make sure that you get on their website and check out their Instagram and figure out exactly when it is. And Knife Talk 10, which is the normal discount code, will not be used during the Black Friday sale because the deals are already set in with the Black Friday sale. They're really, really great. So definitely check out my boys over at Broadbeck Ironworks. I want to thank my friends at Even Heat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To get your next oven, go to evenheat-shield.com. Their customer service is the best. I love these kilns, and I cannot say enough great things about my friends over at Even Heat. So definitely check out what's going on with them. Next are my friends at Maritime Knife Supply. Maritime Knife Supply for all your belts, abrasives, all your knife making needs, belts, abrasives, steels, kilns, forges, press, heat treating ovens. But I got something special for you. Now, this is something special. Lawrence Lake and Maritime Knife Supply has a $2,000 scholarship for the ABS Intro to Bladesmithing. The scholarship is at the New England School of Metalwork, and the application is there. You have until December 1st to apply for this $2,000 scholarship. If you can be from age of 16 to 30, 31, you're out. 32, you're out. 35, go find something else to do. It's too late for you. 16 to 30, ladies and germs. So if you're a young person between 16 and 30, go to New England School of Metalwork and apply for the scholarship. All jokes aside, this is a very great situation, and giving people the opportunity to take a very important bladesmithing class at the New England School of Metalwork. So definitely check it out at New England School of Metalwork. And many thanks to my friend Lawrence Lake at Maritime Knife Supply for being so supportive of the bladesmithing community. But if you need anything, go sponsor. If that ain't good enough for you to, he knows what people are doing and where people should go. So if that's good enough for you, it's good enough for me. That's where, get your stuff from him. Next are my friends at Trojan Horse Forge at TrojanHorseForge.com. Go check out my guys, Sam and Jeff. They built this incredible stable rail knife finishing vise. I used it today. I use it for all my knives, not only for the handles, but they have a deck that bolts on, and you can hand sand your knife with ease. No more fooling around with 2x4s, no more clamps, none of that nonsense. Get yourself a stable rail knife finishing vise and stop playing, because, it ain't getting much better than this. This is the number one thing. So especially the holidays are coming along, and you're looking for, somebody's saying to you, your holidays are coming along, and I was wondering what you wanted for your Christmas. What do you want Santa to get you? You tell them, I want a fucking Trojan Horse Forge stable rail knife finishing vise. Stupid. That's what I want. God damn you. That's what you say. That's what I want Santa to bring me. I want a bomb-proof case. get it for me. So go to TrojanHorseForge.com. And that person who's just kind of got you that thing, they payment plans are available. So don't worry about that. TrojanHorseForge.com. And if you put in the promo code FULLBLAST10, you get 10% off everything, including the T4 Sentinel oil, including the handle press attachment. Definitely worth it. Get it for you. I'm with you. Next, my friends at Baker Forge, BakerForge.com or Baker Forge and Tool on Instagram. If you're looking for some high-level, very exotic steels, Tiger, my bronze, my copper maskers, all that stuff, go to BakerForge.com. And if you put in the promo code FULLBLAST, you're going to get 10% off your order. This stuff is awesome. I love these guys. I love the steel that they make. I've been using it. I've been really enjoying it. And my customers are really identifying with it. So definitely go over to BakerForge.com, put in the promo code FULLBLAST10, you get 10% off. It's easy to work with, easy to cut, easy to grind, easy to work with. And then they make their own proprietary etching called Gator Piss, which is perfect for you to etch anything. Anything you need to etch, this is a very, very, very good etching. I've used it on almost everything that you would etch with, and I love it. So definitely check out that. And you can also get it at Texas Farrier Supply. Texas Farrier Supply, my friends, just had an event in Texas. They had the Blade Fest, and it was a great success. And they're selling all sorts of stuff. They have, if you're in the United States and you're looking for the DOS USA, the Rhino and all that stuff, they have that. They have all the stuff for bladesmithing and blacksmithing. And if you're a farrier, if you're working on that kind of stuff, go to Texas Farrier Supply. And if you put in the promo code FULLBLAST10, you're going to get 10% off everything at Texas Farrier Supply. So get yourself some of that. Get yourself a jug of Gator Piss at Texas Farrier Supply. I want to thank my friends at Baker Forge for getting involved. I want to thank my friends at Total Boat. That's totalboat.com/fullblast. That is the link that gets you to the part where they're looking at me. They're looking at me. When you go to that link, that means Vader's doing something. Full Blast is doing something. They got their eye. They got their eye on that window. And then that's the window I need you to use. So go to that. And all these links are all in the show notes, wherever you get this. So totalboat.com/fullblast. Get your two-part epoxy. I love that. Get the Fathom Thick Set. This stuff is sick. It's really, really great stuff for making handle hybrid material. So definitely check it out. And if it's good enough for Keith Deason, Derek Vermald, and Keith Johnson, Keith Mitchell, and Jimmy DiResta, it's good enough for you. totalboat.com/fullblast. Thank you. Giel Hansen and Sons, he's making new stuff all the time. He's making new Jakartas, and they look amazing. Every time he does a new Jakarta, I'm just like, ooh, hope he sends me some of that. He makes this beautiful Jakarta, and whoever's making it, Mikey, the person who's designing it, is just unbelievable. This stuff is awesome. Great handle material, great stuff for your knives. And if you go to gcarter.bigcartel.com, you can get all that stuff. You get the Bofa, the Ripple Cut, the Tuxini, the Mahi Mahi, Radio Worm Jakarta, Pheasant, Colorama, Hoopla, all that stuff. Electric Fuzz, stuff is awesome, and I highly suggest you get it because people are going to want it. People are going to want it, and they're asking for it. So if they're asking for it, that's good enough for you. And if it's good enough for you, it's good enough for me. And if it's good enough for me, it's good enough for you. All right. Next are my friends at Tormek. I love these guys. And they're this Swedish company making sharpening tools for the maker who needs their tools to stay sharp. If you're a chisel guy, this is for you. I already had a friend of mine who's a chisel guy down the way. He's a woodworker. He just got himself a Tormek. A customer of mine just got himself a Tormek, and they're psyched about it because they can keep their tools sharp. It's not just for knife makers. That's not their first thing is for knife makers. It's for chisel guys. It's for keeping your axes sharp, keeping your chisels sharp. If you're fooling around, if you're a chisel guy and you're fooling around with a whetstone, long day at the office, ladies and germs. You got to get back to work. What are we doing here? So get yourself a Tormek. Go to Tormek.com or go to Tormek_sharpening on Instagram. We're going to have them back soon. I love those guys. And it's such a great time at Sweden. And if you go into the archives and listen to my trip about Sweden, it was awesome. And you listen to the show that we recorded in Sweden, it was really, really great. So definitely check that out. And many thanks to my friends and my supporters of the podcast. I want to welcome aboard one of my friends I love having on, who is a newly minted champion. He's a newly minted champion. Ben Camone, Camone_knives on Instagram, just won best cleaver at the DCI. That's the Damasteel Chef Invitational. He sold out. Champion, Ben, congratulations.
Thanks, man. Yeah. Sold out. That makes me very happy. First time on that event. And yeah, what can I say? It went great. And by now, I feel better already as well.
That when we did the, if you listen to Knife Talk, it hasn't come out. I mean, hopefully it's up by the time this comes out. We recorded the Knife Talk, me and Mareko and Craig of Knife Talk hosted a live podcast. And this is now Monday afternoon in New York. And I got a message from Craig saying that he had a problem downloading the audio was just taking a long time. So hopefully it's probably up by now. But at the same time, we always have such a good time at the event, because the DCI, Damasteel Chef Invitational. Damasteel is a company that makes pattern welded stainless steel, and then they have all these knife makers, really talented knife makers, who use Damasteel to do knives. And then it's a virtual event, and it came from COVID, I would imagine, that people couldn't go to lunch. They did it. They were one of the first people to do this kind of online virtual show. From people from all over the world. There was 1 year where he had Mert Tansu from Australia. He had Balete Knives from in the Philippines. And then you had people in the United States, and then you had people in Europe. So it was early morning. Some people were early in the morning. So it was global.
Yeah.
And it was such an amazing event because as the viewer who went, you could interact with people at the show. So I'm just giving a little bit of a setup. And then with Knife Talk, what we do is every 5 minutes we'll have a new knife maker on from in the event. Now, here's the best thing, Ben. Here's the best thing. Usually, every year we do it, the first person who comes on is Fingal, and he's usually drunk. And he's drunk and happy, and it's because he's sold out everything right off the bat.
Yeah.
I was so happy when you came on because you were so happy and smiling, and you had a beer in your hand. You were all done for the night. Take me through how great of an event it was for you.
So it was a little confusing. So first of all, I have to say Carly, their organizing person, right? Or how would you say
it?
She manages all that, and she does an outstanding job. So she really takes us makers by the hand and, spoon feeds us information and... We will still make mistakes, because we're stupid. But other than that, she couldn't do a better job. So without her, I would have been way more lost than I was already. But it was all a little confusing. So, you're online with your browser sitting there. You have your own booth. Then you have to log into stuff and go there. And then you can get people in who kind of apply to your channel. So if you're doing that for the first time, it's pretty confusing. But other than that, we had a test event and it went smooth, and yeah, couldn't be happier. I sent out a newsletter beforehand, so a few days before the event, offering the knives and taking kind of applications of all the people who might be interested. And so I had a pretty good plan of how to manage all that within the show, because I didn't sell through an online shop, but, was selling them first come, first served at the event. So you popped into my booth, wrote me, hey, I'm taking the Monolith Santoku. And I said, yeah, well, you're first. I'm sending you a payment request, and that's that. So that's how I managed it. I will say, though, it was only five knives, so... Would I have a lineup like Fingal with almost 40 knives? I think that would be impossible.
Yeah, but you know what, though? I give you a lot of credit because you were very... I'm on your newsletter if you want to get on. Ben's newsletter is not frivolous. It's a great newsletter. And it's to the point. It's not every 5 minutes. It's a great newsletter. And I was really... Because, I do the Damasteel. We're like the co-hosts of it for the most part. Yeah. So I know what goes into it. I know how tricky it is. And every year... The technology gets better and better. Trust me, this year was way easier than the years before. They've changed away how you log in, how you register. It's much more frictionless. But I also know that if I did it for the first time, I don't think I would be as organized as you were, because you kind of prime the pump. I don't necessarily think that. I think that you're an extraordinarily good business person. Because I think maybe because you had watched it before, listened to it on Knife Talk, and kind of had a better idea.
Yeah,
you were so much smarter than a lot of people because you primed the pump for success.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a little bit. I mean, I getting my guys from the newsletter in, that maybe it was like a little bit, you know, how do you say it?
That's using your fucking head.
Yeah,
exactly. Not a lot of people in that. I'm not on a lot of newsletters, but not a lot of people did that. You know, and this is kind of one of the things I want to talk about, was the fact that when we're craftspeople, and I mean, you're one of the best knife makers I know, and I'm very honored that you would consider me a friend, I consider you a friend. And
I do.
All right, good. That would have been real awkward. That would have been real awkward. We're like, I don't think we're there yet, Jeff.
Show
Jesus up. Christ. Hey, moving too fast there, Jeff. But the problem is the business end of this is most people who make knives don't have the foresight to think, all right, maybe I should draw my customers to this place. And a lot of them think that they're just going to be automatic customers there.
Yeah. No, that's certainly not the case. I mean, even I, and, you know, my newsletter sales are rather successful, I would say, for me, to my metrics, you know, but even I with my newsletter, and there are quite some people on it, wasn't able to mobilize a lot of people, because it's still, you know, different time zones. Maybe then you don't have time at that day.
Or don't care.
Yeah, or don't care. And, you know, a lot of people don't like those knives, that kind of price tag on them. And, you know, so to expect people randomly showing up there just because they follow you on Instagram and, you know, themselves taking notes on when the event will be and just show up, that's, yeah, I mean, you can do that, but that's not setting you up for success, I guess.
Well, this whole bit, I mean, I can't tell you how many times on Knife Talk we get DMs from questions from people who are just starting out, and then they're looking for instant success without any pain. Like, there's no, that people don't want pain. People don't want the disappointment. People don't want the dissatisfaction. People want immediate success. And it becomes one of those things where, how do you prepare people to, like, what you did was, when I saw your face, frankly, I could tell, because you're a serious guy, but I know you like to come on here to tell dick jokes and fuck around, which I have the utmost respect for, because like I said, you're one of the best knife makers I know, and you're a very serious guy in that department. But the fact that you want to come over here and just do dick jokes is like the best, in my opinion. But you don't give yourself enough credit in regards to how you've kind of curated your business, because that in and of itself of like, guiding people. Fingal's the same way. I mean, he does a lot of like the business end of figuring out ways in which to do better business as a craftsperson.
Yeah. I think many knife makers I talk to aren't really considering themselves business people in that kind of sense. And you talk a lot about it. They wouldn't say their knife making is a job, maybe even if they are full time. Many people do. I mean, a lot of knife makers I know, even just in Austria, Martin Huber, Tobias Hangler, they are very serious business people. But many are not. And I don't even think that they aspire to be business people. But I mean, I think you have to really decide that for yourself as a maker, because they don't. Sometimes they don't seem to go to work to earn money to live.
Right.
You know, they make it as a hobby and are happy if some money comes in, more or less. I have that impression sometimes.
Well, sorry.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Whereas I think I consider that my job, and I go to work because I earn money there. If I wouldn't earn money there, I would enjoy way more sitting at home with my family if I, was fucking rich. So that's a job for me still. I have fun with it. I'm passionate about it. Don't get me wrong, but it's still a job. It's something I do to earn a living.
The tricky part about knife making, and we don't really talk about it very much, is it's different than most crafts. Well, it's different than most crafts because, I mean, if you were a sculptor, I know painters who paint for the sake of painting. And then they have they take their painting, maybe it's a watercolor, then they have a book of it, and then they just kind of put it away. And they're just trying to get better. But when you're a knife maker, you can't, I mean, the knife's got to go somewhere. I mean, you, if you're making a lot of them, and you're just, what are you doing? You're putting them in boxes and then storing them?
Yeah.
Get them out. You know, so it becomes harder of a craft to not monetize. Like, it's almost like, I mean, if you were a sculptor and you just wanted to make sculpture and put it on the wall, that's one thing. But if you're a knife maker, it's not really sculpture. It's not really something, it's not a decorative, it's not a decorative thing that that you could just put on in your house. So it naturally kind of goes towards something that's more commercial. The problem is people are just not prepared for what it's like to be in a business and how you kind of capitalize on situations. And then two is people don't understand that the way business is being seen is changing all the time, every day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty dynamic, I would say. I mean, I think a lot about this stuff when you said a true artist, I'm trying to quote you, will do his art on a deserted island as well,
yeah,
just for the sake of it. And I'm thinking about myself and thinking, would I make knives if you know, if it wasn't my job? And I'm thinking maybe 1, 2, 3 a year, but not to that extent. So I personally see myself also more as a craftsman than an artist. But at the end of the day, some customers, you know, would say the knife they got from me is art. And if they say that about it, I'm not mad about it, you know?
Yeah,
I'm happy
if
they say it. It's a compliment to me.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't describe myself as an artist. Nor do I think that someone educated in art would do that. But I mean, yeah, it's mainly a business, I would say.
100%. And that quote was, I used to have interns and when I was a sculptor, and I have these parents that would bring their kids, and then I work with the high schools, and then I'd have kids come and be an intern. And I had this mother come to me and she says, my son wants to be a sculptor. What do you think it takes? And I said, it's a compulsion. I said, being an artist is a compulsion to the point where if no one ever saw your work, you'd still make work. I said, you have to have that mindset. And I feel as though with a small business too, I feel as though you do have to, if you really want it to succeed, you do have to have that same compulsion of, not that I need to talk about knife making every 5 minutes. I mean, like, you know, if you go to some of these events, and there's some people who are compulsive about talking about knife making. I give Mareko a lot of credit because he can talk about making knives all day, all night, for weeks on end. This is his passion. This is his love. He loves this.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it. I don't even want to. I don't want to talk about a knife. You know, if I don't have to talk about knives, I don't want to talk about it. But at the same time, I think I'm kind of closer to you in terms of I like the fact that this is a business, and I do like that. To me, my Fader Knives is the sculpture, so I'm enjoying, you know, making it go forward and getting it bigger and growing.
Yeah.
And I think that for me, that's far more interesting. The business end has now become far more interesting to me than the design end, because like I'm still, you know, constantly changing things and looking at old knives and kind of seeing what I did wrong and where I could get better and stuff like that. But I do like the idea of, like you, is how can we go to work every day and then bring money home and then it not just kind of die on the vine?
I mean, what you said about Mareko, I can get pretty nerdy about knives as well, and I'm just thinking where the difference would be. Maybe I've got a little bit of both in those regards, because I obsess about knives pretty much, but I'm always, you know, I wouldn't obsess about something where I knew that it wouldn't sell, and maybe some little projects, but As we said, at the end of the day, I have to run a company and have to earn money with it. Otherwise, I couldn't feed my family. And that's always a consideration. So I obsess about shit. And then I try to monetize my talent, or however you would want to call it, right? And not just let it go to waste. Whereas with some people, I get the passionate part as well. but they don't seem to care about selling the stuff. My father was pretty much like that. He was super talented craftsman and did all kinds of things with his hands and but never was able to, you know, make money using his talent, his craft talent.
My father was one of the best painters I ever met in my life. It, still to this day, and I can even be as like an independent observer. His paintings were extraordinary. He's still my favorite painter I ever met. He refused to sell his work. He refused to go to galleries. He just, and it was like, I don't know, I couldn't, I mean, he's not alive to talk to him about it, but I figured out later in life why, I think, my opinion on why he didn't do it. And some people are like that. I mean, that's the compulsion that you want. You want somebody, if you're, but the funny part is even if somebody's talented enough and they're driven enough, it isn't enough to sustain a business. Talent alone isn't enough.
Oh yeah, definitely not. Was your father like that as well, that it's almost not honorable to make money off of your talent or something like that? Because
no,
I think my father
all.
Had
he
that
was,
a little bit.
My father was not a fucking noble person. He was not a noble person. And the crazy part is he was such a gifted painter. And he was such a not an, and he loved money, but he just didn't want to sell his work. And part of me feels as though I came to the conclusion, it didn't make a lot of sense because he was super duper cheap, but he had a lot of money. And I mean, without getting into it too far, I mean, he disinherited me and my sisters, but that's, you know, for another day. I think that I feel as though that. As a creative person with talent, I felt as though when he did something really great that he fell in love with, he felt that he couldn't do better. And I feel as though it was a stunting of his creativity to think that he couldn't get better. That's why I try to be very frivolous with all my stuff. And I feel as though if you don't have the mindset that it's the next one's not going to be better, I think it's the death knell of creativity or executing creativity.
Yeah.
But it's the whole thing is weird. But I actually had something I wanted to bring up to you today in church terms about this business is there's a number of things which was this morning I was reading this article in New York State. There's a lot of cannabis dispensaries. I'm sure in Austria there are no cannabis dispensaries. That's just my opinion. I don't know.
Not yet. In Germany, it's legal already.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, yeah. And usually we Austrians come after the Germans, right?
Okay. So. Okay, all right. Well, what's interesting is when it became legal in New York recreationally, a lot of people felt like this is a great business opportunity that we need to get, you know, we should be ahead of. To get the license, because it's you got to get licenses and it's very difficult and all that stuff. And what's interesting was there's a couple of places where they opened one place up in my town. They opened up a second place, and now the council is, you know, the common council of our town is doing they're taking the application for a third place. And there are a lot of people who are not for it. One of the interesting things was one of the dispensaries that exists, got their permits and they're running. They said in this article that they don't want other cannabis dispensaries to open up. And the reason why is, and this was shocking to me, was the guy said, you think we make a lot of money, but we really don't. And one of the interesting things was, he says, because of the way, number one, the taxes on cannabis is 13%, which is like, was a lot. I mean, it's 8.25% sales tax in New York in general, but it's 13% for cannabis.
Okay.
Number two is there's these tax rules. Like if you have a business like in Fader Knives, anything I buy for the company, we can write it off at the end of the year as a tax deduction.
Yeah.
I'm sure you have the same thing in
totally.
Austria.
Yeah.
In the cannabis business, you cannot deduct anything. There is no tax deductions.
Yeah, because it's illegal on a federal level, right?
Well, I guess so. Yeah, that's it. So what ends up happening is you're taxed out the wazoo, and then, you know, you can't even buy a, you know, if you have to fix a sheetrock wall, you can't deduct the sheetrock wall. So all of a sudden, it's this like, you think that it's this great business, and you have all this stuff, and you figured it out, and you got all the licensing. these guys can't make any money because they're paying everything to the government.
That's interesting.
It's crazy.
I would have thought that it's quite profitable because, yeah, I mean, you're essentially a farmer, right?
Right.
Just not planting crops, but wheat.
Well, they're not farmers. These are people who get it. You're basically like you have a store, and you're getting government issued. You know, there are growers and there are people who may, don't ask me. I'm not a, you know, I don't know nothing about it. But I mean, there's, you can't just like grow your own weed and sell it.
Yeah, just retailers market. Then, essentially.
You're a retailer of certified products.
Interesting.
So if you imagine, I mean, I was my jaw hit the ground. It wasn't because of like, my jaw hit the ground of the fact that how does anyone, you could find something that you think is going to do great for business.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it sounds like the worst business to be in the world.
Although I will say, if it was so bad, maybe he's just talking shit to save his business, because if it was so bad, there wouldn't be another person trying to cut into that market and making another store.
I thought the same thing, but I thought the exact same thing. I was talking to my wife and I said, maybe, I sent her the article and I said, maybe he doesn't want another place to open up because he's afraid he's going to lose more business.
Yeah.
And I was just like, it's very similar to the knife making business. Whereas in like, you're worried, oh, he's doing my style, and if he's watering down the business. And I talked to a great knife maker a number of years ago. About 5 years ago, he told me the golden age is over of knife making. This is 5 years ago.
Yeah.
He says, because everyone's watering down the custom knife business. Everybody's watering it down. Everyone's stealing everybody's designs, and they're watering it down. And then a lot of people, even on Knife Talk, we try to be positive, and I know Mareko is very much along the lines of, and I am too, of like, oh, don't worry about it. People are copying your shit. Don't worry about that. But at the same time, it's like, how do you have a business where you think, all right, this is really going to do well? And there are these other forces outside that are stopping you, including people taking, you know, opening up next to you, next door to you. But the crazy part is this cannabis is just like, I was like dumbfounded because I thought, you can't, if I couldn't deduct my expenses for Fader Knives, I had to cut this shit out and I would have been selling things under the table out of my garage years ago.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we're talking about a lot of money.
I mean, the guy said he made 1 month, he said in the article they made $200,000 in $200,000 in a month or something like, or a week or a month. I don't remember what it was. And he says, but we only made $3,000 worth of profit.
Oh.
Out of $200,000.
Okay, that's,
I'm like,
that's,
Jesus Christ.
That's margins.
That's terrible. I mean, that is
worse
like legitimately
than restaurant
like,
business.
That's the worst. That's right. That's worse than the restaurant business.
What I'm most confused about, what happens in the US with that is that the federal level doesn't overrule the state level. I don't know how that works with you guys, but I'm pretty certain that such things couldn't happen here in Austria, because it's pretty logical. Imagine you know, the city of Vienna, that's not a state but a county, so to say,
right?
And yeah, some laws are specific to the counties, you know, but they wouldn't overrule the national law. So how does that work with you? I'm so confused.
I have no idea. I admit you're, you know what? I didn't even, you know, it took you, who's not even from the United States, to tell me, is like, how does it not be overruled by the federal level because it's illegal federally? And I was like, you know what? He's fucking right. I have no idea. It didn't even dawn on me. I figured if they're able to pay taxes, and they have to pay taxes, you have to pay federal taxes.
Yeah.
You can't just pay state taxes.
Yeah.
Then the federal's getting a piece. Everyone's getting a piece. And frankly, after I read all about how much these guys pay and how much the buyer pays, it's very expensive. 13% cannabis tax, all this stuff. I'm just like, it's like working for a mobster. It's like you have to, you know, working for the government is like working for the mobs in the mob in this situation.
I mean, funny that you say mobster, because then you have the competition of illegal weed still, I would assume. So under the hand sold weed, I wouldn't assume that completely went away, right?
I don't think so. I think it's probably cheaper to buy it under the table than, I mean, it is. I talked to a friend of mine who goes to dispensaries, and he says that that a lot of them are very expensive. And a lot of it is because probably to make up for, you know, the fact that they're getting, you know, reach in their pocket so much.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is in terms of the business end of it, like let's, I mean, you know, we talk about, you know, when you're a knife maker or a maker of anything and you decide to go into business for yourself, you feel as though you have your hand on a product that you can put out in the marketplace that you like and that people connect to, and then you can put a dollar value that people receive and they understand and they can relate to, or that no one's going, you know, some people, you know, you're going to get people to say, you know, this is expensive, you're crazy, but you're going to get a lot of people to be like, that sounds great, give me two. So you have something as a maker, and then how do you figure out ways in which to go forward? And one of the reasons why I bring this up too is because my wife is down in at a medical convention in Kentucky, in Louisville, Kentucky, which is, you know, great southern city and south of Ohio, Cincinnati. Yeah. And she says that it's very similar to all the other places that she, you know, that we kind of go to, where the stores are empty. There's restaurants and but there's no stores anymore. And we're finding that in our town where there's no stores anymore. And people are worried about business, and all of a sudden these towns are no longer, some of these towns are not walkable towns anymore because there's nothing there. And what we don't realize is knife makers, and we're so young at the concept of business, we don't realize that what Amazon and all these companies where you can buy stuff online has destroyed, or is in the act of destroying the businesses.
I'm a little torn on that because... if I think about small stores where I go in and buy something, usually I'm not afraid, might be the wrong word, but I would not necessarily do that, because usually you don't find everything, then you have to go to the next store. Just saying, there is a reason for those stores not existing anymore, and it's not just that Amazon is the bad guy. But in the sense of exploiting their employees and all that, they just at the end of the day had a more attractive business model and have a more attractive business model overall. So I find those little stores and maybe, you know, a street where several stores are at, also nice to see and have, but if they can't sustain a living, that has a reason, and we are all responsible for that, buying at Amazon and so on. And I understand it. That's what I want to say a little bit, because those stores sometimes are a pain in the ass. They are small.
100%.
Then they only accept cash payment, for example, or something like that. Weird shit. Then they run out of something that you're used to buy there. Then you can drive home again and order it at Amazon anyways. So, I'm sorry for it. You know, I feel those people. But at the end of the day, I'm also thinking, well, there is a reason for that. And maybe you weren't competitive enough for whatever reason.
It's convenient. Let's face it. I mean, perfect example are all the sponsors of this show.
Yeah.
I don't think any of them have a retail store. Texas Ferry Supply does. But they don't need to have a retail store because people advertise on the podcast and advertise on Instagram, and then they just ship things.
Exactly.
So there's no real need. There's no real need for it anymore. But what's interesting is we're looking at these towns, and I know in my town people are complaining about nobody's coming to this town. Nobody's going to the restaurants. I know my friends who are restaurant people are like, we're dead. No one's coming into the town, and there's no reason to have come into the town, right? Because, I mean, like, stores are closing. Their stores have been closed with nobody wants to come in and, you know, put in a store anymore. And then you're right. There's three hardware stores around me, and I know which ones I'm going to be fucking screwed by. Yeah. I know which ones I'm not going to be able to figure it out, except for the fact that sometimes I'll walk into the store with something, like if I'm looking for a specific screw, I'll walk in and just try to fit the screw in the store, and then I decide if I'm going to buy it or not, as opposed to, you know, buying the wrong one online.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is as makers, as people who are trying to find our happiness by selling the fruit of our labor that we love. It's like, how do we move forward knowing that the business is going to change? I'm really grateful for the fact that you guys did the Dam of Steel Invitational. My buddy Tomer sent it to me. He's like, how come they didn't invite me? I want to be in it. So we're going to make sure we get Tomer in there too, because, you know, Florentine Kitchen Knives deserves it.
I wasn't invited either.
Oh, how did you do it?
Tomer can't bitch around.
Okay, wait, so you reached out?
Yeah, I just applied. Right, I mean, it was a happy accident, because I had a befriended knife maker from Sweden. He stopped knife making, and he was with his camper, you know, driving throughout Europe around. And he visited us, or me, and brought me some Dam of Steel steel he had laying around. That was far over a year ago. Probably 2 years ago. And then I randomly, you know, for the sake of it, forged one monolith out. That was the one of those two monoliths I had. And then I applied with it. So that knife was ready since a year.
All right. So I'll let him know. I'll talk to Tomer, if you're listening to this, I got you, my guy. Don't worry about that. I'll get a hold of Carly. Don't worry, we got you.
No, they will welcome him, I'm sure.
Oh, of course they'll welcome him. They know him. They know him. I don't know why. I don't know what they say. It's invitation. They shouldn't say invitational. They say it should be something else. But here's what's interesting about Dam of Steel. If you think about it as a business, Dam of Steel, if you were to look at, it's such a huge operation. Same thing as Baker Forge, huge operation.
Yeah.
They're using when I say using, I'm saying this with, like, you know, peace and love. This is not like a, you know, when you have knife makers, small time knife makers using your material and posting about it, that's like PR.
Yeah, totally.
You know, they're having the Dam of Steel Invitational, you got one guy making three, you made five. It was the Acre Forge made like 40, they had 40 pieces, and Fingal got 40 pieces. These are not the customers that, I think that if you were to go into the back office and the back meetings with the you got to go through the double doors where everybody ain't in, and they're talking about their future forecast of the kind of where they want to be, they're looking for companies like big companies to be buying Dam of Steel in bulk. They're what we're doing is we're giving good PR.
Yeah,
We're buying the steel. And maybe we get a discount here. Maritime Knife Supply was giving a discount of it. And, you know, Knife Talk 10 gives you 10% off on that Dam of Steel stuff. But it's like we're not there what they're depending on. We're there almost like we're their PR department.
Like
we're saying Dam of Steel all the time.
They sell to bigger companies like Wüsthof or something, you mean?
I would think. I mean, that's the only reason why you go into this business.
I mean,
it's like...
Yeah, I wonder how much steel they put out yearly or annually, because the way they produce their steel is pretty much effort.
They're looking for big buyers. The same thing with Baker Forge. I had Koi on. I'll have him on soon rather than later. I'll reach out. If you're listening to this, Koi, I'm going to reach out to you very soon. We're going to get you back on. But when Koi talks about the Baker Forge steel, they can't, like, if I need, like, a guy wanted to do a set of knives, and I know that Koi doesn't do, like, you can't just pick whatever you want.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like, you know, they're looking for bulk orders. Like, if you wanted, like, a lot of it, then they could give you the same stuff. But if you're looking for three pieces for three knives, you may be shit out of luck, only because they're looking for, like, Spider Tech, Spider Co, Microtech. They want companies that are going to buy a pile of knives, because that's their better market in terms of the business. Now, what brings me to, custom knife makers, so many people are like getting involved because they're finding some sort of satisfaction. But then the hard part is so many of them are just, they're not willing to be having a problem. They're not willing to invest in their own mistakes at all. Like, you have no idea.
Yeah, no, I have a good idea.
Some people used to sneak into my DMs, and they used to say, how do you do this?
Yeah, I get those.
And I used to, back in the day, I would be vague. And I'd be like, look, I'm not going to tell you how to make my knives. And then I would be like, on Knife Talk, we would say, you know, do a little bit of work. It sometimes it takes, and I think to myself, I'm like, here's a guy who bought a pile of whatever, Damascus, and he's afraid of fucking it up. And he's, no, understand. But at the same time, he's like, he isn't willing to kind of problem solve his problems. Now, at the beginning, I was just like, you know, do a little bit of research. And now I'm like, it just, if I need to give you my recipe for heat treating this knife, it's faster than us going back and forth all the time.
But
so I had a guy who listens to the podcast, great dude, asked me about AEBL, and he had a couple questions, and I just told him this is what I do. And I was just like, that's it. We're not going to go back and forth. And it's at the end of the world. But at the same time, in my mind, I thought, here's a guy who bought a pile of AEBL, and he's deathly afraid of ruining it.
Yeah. I'm a little bit torn about those people because, I mean, usually for one, I help them. And right. If those are most of the time they are hobby knife makers and they have a genuine question, they are not trying to rip me off or something like that. I have, at least I assume, maybe I'm naive, right. But at the end of the day, even if they were to rip me off, I mean, for one, all the info and all the pictures and everything is out there. You just have to search for it.
Right.
But if you're the kind of guy, that is just ripping someone else off, you're no competition for me anyways. I'm not worried about you because you don't have it in you. And that might sound so arrogant, but you don't have it in you to run a successful business in this branch of craft anyways. At least I think so. And if you're not creative and also creative if you're problem solving, funny that you say that because I think that's hugely important. You can't just always cry mommy when you have a problem. You have to fucking solve that yourself because otherwise you won't get shit done, or you will solve problems always in the exact way they have already been solved, and you won't have a genuinely unique product at the end of the day, because the process is at least as important as the design, or they go together at the end, right?
I'm so glad you said that, because this morning I was listening to an interview with Josh Brolin. You know who Josh Brolin is?
Yeah, the actor, right?
Yeah, actor. He was Thanos in the Avengers movie.
Oh, No Country for Old Men.
No Country for Old Men was what put him on the map, and he was Thanos in the Avengers movie. Yeah. And he was talking about the being Thanos. It was a it's a cartoon character. You know, it's like the comic book character Thanos was a cartoon.
Yeah.
And they showed him what it was going to look like. And he, you know, in the beginning, it was like, all right, so let's do a cartoon voice of like, I'm Thanos. And then he went through all these, you know, scenes and stuff. And he was talking to the director and he goes, I'm not sure that this is the right, I don't think I'm doing the right voice. I don't think this is the right tone for this guy. Because originally Thanos wasn't, you know, Thanos was very contemplative and he putting his hand in his face, and the whole idea is he's like, he's about to kill half the universe. And he bring the weight of it, and he sounds just exhausted. He sounds kind of more human than the cartoon. And then the director says, yeah, I don't think it's going to work. Let's figure something else out. And when they finally figured out the voice and the tone and the personality of Thanos, Josh Brolin turns to the director and he goes, well, why didn't you say something? Why didn't you say something in the beginning? Why'd you let me go through it all? And the director turns to me and goes, well, this is the process. This is the process of figuring out what doesn't work and then addressing it and then making the changes to evolve and to work. But it's interesting you said the process, because he was like, I mean, you want to talk about like millions and millions of dollars of movie. And they didn't really know what his acting choice was. And then the director was just like, I'm putting faith in you and faith in the acting process that will come to the right conclusion. And with the knife making, the funny thing is like, you know, these guys are asking me what's your recipe for AEBL? And part of me is just like, well, I can give you a range. And then I'll tell you what I do, just because I just don't have the time for all this extra.
Yeah.
But it's interesting is that a lot of these guys don't really want the process of making mistakes.
Not only the process of making mistakes, but also the process of informing themselves. I mean, I read fucking huge amount of books to be informed about metallurgy and all that shit. Some people just don't want to put the effort in, no matter where or how. And that's why I said those guys won't be any competition anyways. And I usually, when I have the time, try to help them out just because, yeah.
It's almost faster to help them than not.
Not only that, it's also, I mean, I don't know. I'm asshole enough. I don't need to be extra asshole.
That isn't true. Come on, Ben. Come on. Don't say that. That's crazy. No. But where did you get your business sense? I mean, like, I was really impressed with the fact that, you know, your newsletter came out less than a week from when the Dan Mastile Invitational is,
yeah.
And you timed it so it would be on the tips of people's minds as opposed to join me in 2 months for the Dan Mastile Invitational.
Thanks for noticing. That was my intention. I thought when I put it out a week before, that would be too long. People will forget. No one takes a note or makes a reminder in his smartphone. And I was thinking when I put it on Thursday, that yeah. will still be, you know,
fresh.
Ahead enough to plan something to get Saturday free. If you have to, and still close enough not to forget. So, because if you put it too close at Friday or maybe Saturday, the day off, then maybe people don't have time anymore because they are with family or friends or whatever. Yeah, but that was the idea. And I mean, business sense, I couldn't really tell you. My parents aren't business people, but I think I learned a lot from the mistakes of my father because he was very much the opposite of a business person. I don't know if I ever told you the story, but he was so little understanding of business, or how do you say it? He was understanding.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday." Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Business so little.
Yeah, yeah.
He once, when I built my shop, you know, I was getting self-employed and I had to cast the foundation of my power hammer. Just a little one that was just standing on top of the floor. 800 kilograms, like a small car weight, you know?
Right.
And I was ordering concrete and it was super cheap. They, including the minimum order quantity of 1 ton, I just had a few hundred kilograms. They charged me €250, including the
wow.
delivery.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's like $250. That's pretty much one-on-one.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And I said, my dad, if I'm going to the hardware store, getting cement, getting the steel, the
rebar.
Yeah, rebar.
Yeah.
Getting a trailer in the first place from my...
Forget it.
Yeah, yeah. All that time. And he said, then do it on the weekend. Then it isn't work time. And I'm saying, as soon as I, as a self-employed person, work in my shop, it's work time. It's you
yeah.
know, he didn't understand that it's cheaper to order that concrete. It didn't compute at all. I was explaining to him, look, that the hours I put in that I'm missing making knives, actually earning money in your approach, is what I save by ordering €250 concrete and not doing anything other than casting it in and just, you know, shaking it a little, shaking the bubbles out, but not investing a lot of time. He couldn't understand it. And I think that I learned a lot from him just doing the opposite of what he was doing.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? There are a lot of people in your situation who would have done exactly what your dad said. And people would have thought of it like it's a great experience as opposed to thinking about it from a business standpoint. I mean, I'm a huge fan of buy it. Back in the day when I first started at the Center for Metal Arts, we never made our tools that we needed. Like, it was crazy to think, all right, well, we're going to forge everything and everything's going to be like beautiful and stuff like that. We were like, we got to get to work.
Yeah.
We got to get to work. We don't have time for everything has to be beautiful. We got to fucking get to, we have to make money. And it was like, it, even like the hammer, we didn't make our own hammers in the beginning. We were just using Hoffy hammers and that's what we used because we had them.
Yeah.
Just like, you want to make a hammer? Like, why do I want to make a hammer? I got one right here. It works great. And I got to work.
Yep.
So I think that there are a lot of people who would rather pour the foundation themselves. But I mean, $250, that's just the material alone. Then you got to schlep it. And then you got to mix it. And then you got to do it.
Exactly.
And that's a day event. Forget it. That's a bargain. $250. I'm a dad. And you kidding me?
I think the experience is valuable. But if I think about spending the time with my family or spending the time on a Saturday in the shop mixing concrete, then that's an easy choice. So fuck the experience of pouring concrete or mixing concrete and do something else.
Here's another thing in terms of experience. I'm sure you have experience in this. I've recently been getting... I have a policy on Instagram, and nobody reads it, and in social media, that I don't do business in the DMs. Yeah. And the reason why is for a number of reasons. Well, number one is you can't fucking categorize. I'm not going to be going on my stories. Who was it who wanted this? I'm not doing that. That's like fucking JV shit. I'm not doing that. Yeah. Junior varsity. And I also don't. I feel as though that's the inklings of time being wasted and, you know, energy being wasted, but also you're dealing with a lot of tire kickers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When I say tire kickers, window shoppers.
Yeah.
So what I do is I have everything on the website and I don't sell it unless it's ready to go on the website because I'm going for some frictionless business. You know, click it and there it is. You know, that's what I like.
Yeah, totally.
It makes life easier. So I posted on Facebook a knife that was available. And then in the DMs, somebody put a screenshot of the picture that says, is this still available? Well, I already listed the picture and I also put the screenshot. I put the picture in and I had a hyperlink that you could just click direct and it would take you to the thing and you could know whether you could buy it or not. Guy slips into my DMs, is still available? And I said, yes. And I put it, I copied another hyperlink in and he goes, and the guy goes, where are you located?
Oh.
And I said, and I'm thinking to myself, this is all too much. And I wrote New York and that's it. And then he goes, I'm in Maryland. Is that a problem? Now, just to let you know, this is not an international situation.
No, yeah.
You can ship from New York to Maryland, no problem and everything like that. And as soon as he asked me where I was from, my fucking radar went off. And first of all, I thought, I don't do business with the DMs. And number two is, I don't think this is a person.
No, yeah.
So I went to their thing. I went to their profile. And I looked at their profile. And the name of the person was Edwards Jason, which is not a fucking name. I mean, it's like you told me your name was Camones Ben.
Yeah.
It's not a name. You know, it's not your fucking American, you know. So... Edwards Jason, and then I look at his profile, and then he's got a picture of himself, and then every week, you know, every other picture is a picture of himself with somebody else, picture of himself with somebody else, and it's the same picture over and over again, and then the English is garbage. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. And I immediately be like, okay, block. I blocked him. I don't even, there's no more me answering any questions, and I go back to the idea of, all right, I don't do business in the DMs, and I let it go. So my wife was just like, oh, what's going on? I'm like, I'm dealing with a guy who almost scammed me. She goes, what are you talking about? I'm like, this was clearly, and I explained it to her. I said, this is what all these knife makers are going through. They're getting guys in their DMs or fake people, and then they'll do this thing where they'll say, oh, I can't use your website. Can you send me a friend, you know, a PayPal, you know, money request?
Yeah.
And then there's some fucking scam going along.
Yeah,
and every so often on Knife Talk, or I'll hear it on another podcast, somebody's gotten scammed or screwed. And I was like, it took me two bubbles to realize I'm not fucking. This is some bullshit. I know this is a fucking bad road.
You
must have stories like this.
Yeah. But I never successful ones for them, at least. And I always wonder who falls for those scams because they will. I mean, obviously, otherwise those people wouldn't exist. But there are just very few rules you have to follow. If the amount isn't cleared on your account, don't do anything. Stop. And that's it. That's the main rule. They can send you all screenshots all they want. Never follow a link that is outside of your... like if you get an email, your bank account has been hacked and click here to restore your password or anything. If you're unsure if it's scam or not, go on your bank account's website, on your own, with your own browser, the official website, log in there and see if it works or not and see if there is a message or anything, if you're insecure about it, But just very few rules you have to follow and you can't be scammed. I don't get how yours...
Well, knife makers, I mean, this was clearly a person. Person was clearly a person. And they were responding to me. However, the responses felt weird. They didn't feel...
Yeah, I can tell you why. Because
why?
They are having open 30 chats with people like you and me and whoever.
Right.
And they're right. Responding because that's their job.
right. I just, interesting that you say that. I just got this text. I screenshotted it for this conversation. It happened a couple hours ago. Here's the text. This is from U.S. It says, U.S. Post, you have a USPS parcel being cleared due to the detection of an invalid zip code address. The parcel cannot be cleared. The parcel is temporarily detained. Please confirm the zip code, address information in the link within 24 hours. This is bullshit. Yeah. And it says, please reply with a yes, then exit the text message and open it again to activate the link, or copy the link into your Safari browser to open it. Have a great day from the USPS team. The text number is outside the United. It's 63951. It's not even an American address.
Yeah, that's...
And people are falling for this because it's just like, you detected the wrong zip code, but you all of a sudden you have my telephone number? Get the fuck out of here, man.
True. No, that's what I'm saying. So, I mean, how do you fall for that? It's pretty obvious.
Knife makers fall for this shit all the time. And it's like, the funny thing is, I remember a couple years ago, Mert Tansu had a story about this guy who he dealt with.
Yeah.
And he sold him a knife, and then the guy... what seemed like he was a real person, and he apparently was a real person, and then he did this fraud. He said he sent a message through PayPal saying, this wasn't what I wanted, I want my money back. And then PayPal sided with the buyer and screwed Mert, and then this guy turned out to be just a scam artist. And the thing is with and Mert told the story. It was on the Knife Makers Down Under podcast, and it was a pretty riveting story.
Yeah.
And I had him on, in the archives of this podcast, and he told us the story. And it was two or three years ago.
Yeah.
And it was like, I hear this shit all the time. I hear really great knife makers who are all the business they're doing in the DMs. If you were interested in this, get into the DMs with me. And it's like, and then when something bad happens, they're astonished.
Worst thing about the DMs is generally I try to consolidate it all on one platform. That's email. So it's for me, it's the main thing. It's WhatsApp, DMs, and then maybe, I don't know, talking to people in person maybe, and a call and all that. And I'm just saying, no, fuck you. Get it all in the email, and that's that. Then the next thing with the DMs is you have no search function, so it's useless. If I want to search an address, way up in the chat or something, I have to manually search it. So that sucks as well. And the last thing I will say is sometimes, proper fuck you goes a long way, in the sense that if PayPal sides with the customer and you can prove that you shipped it out and that package was received, PayPal can suck my dick. They will pay me. Otherwise, I will sue them. And I did that.
Well, I mean, good luck.
No. I got money from FedEx. I got money from UPS. They are all trying. I don't give a fuck. I'm directly emails to my lawyer, and he does it for me. I don't care.
Really?
Yeah, totally.
You're suing people?
I had one time.
You're threatening.
One time I had to sue. The other time
it
was just...
I want to hear the story. Let's hear it. I want to hear the story.
Now, the one time the lawyer actually, made proper legal steps. But the other times, it was sufficient for the lawyer to just send a letter, essentially, and just threatening to sue. But the problem I'm having right now with FedEx is they seem to not send out the customs duty to my customers in the US. So when I send a knife to the US, my US customers will have to pay customs duty as if I import something outside of the European Union. So you will just be charged your local taxes. That's nothing I do. That's really your local government charging you, right? And FedEx sends out letters. They will, you know, make customs duty happen. They will pay upfront, then deliver the package, and then they will charge the customer afterwards. And they don't seem to send out letters because that's a new problem. And I talked to one of my retailers where this also happened, and I just asked him, hey, did they send you an invoice and you didn't pay, or what's going on? I'm sorry for the inconvenience and all. And he said, no, he never got anything. And then he called them and he told me, I think he said they sent it to his old address or something like that. He then paid and it was no problem. But there again, I just told them, fuck you, I'm not paying taxes that aren't, you know, I as an Austrian can't pay US taxes. What am I? Fucking charity? You know? No, and I said, they were threatening to shut down my account. They were threatening with I don't know what. And I just told them, try to get that money from me. Good luck. I'm not paying that because it's completely logical. And yeah. Didn't have to pay it. I mean, they let go of it. What can I say?
This is part of experience that people aren't prepared for. You know, you can learn how to do all the stuff, you can learn how to make stuff, but you don't know how to decide on your decisions. And it was interesting was I was thinking about I was talking to my kid, yeah. And she was talking about some of the people at her college, and these are very wealthy kids, and they have it reminded me of a lot of knife makers I know, and they're very idealistic. These kids, she was telling me, these kids are saying these things, they're very idealistic in regards to their thoughtfulness, and they're very, you know, head sure about these crazy things. And I won't go into it, but she was, you know, talking about it. And I said, well, here's the funny thing is when you don't have to pay bills, you have a lot of time on your hands to kind of come up with who the person that you think you are.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with a lot of knife makers. They're very talented. They have all the abilities in the world to make what they want. And then they make these hard and fast decisions because they don't have to pay their bills. Like, they'll have some, maybe the money from coming somewhere else, and they can make the decision whether or not this is how I'm going to do business or not. But it's almost, it's idealism. Idealism is great, except for when reality has to kick in. And the funny thing is without having the experience of, like, I don't want that to happen again, like what you had with FedEx, and you're going to make sure that that is not something that you just do every single time, is have the same problem over and over again. A lot of these guys, these younger guys, are looking for the salvation of this any kind of making as a business, but they're not understanding that business is like, being in business is like this very flexible situation, and the rules change all the time, and there are things out of your control, and how do you keep your happiness and grow?
You can't
be
stupid.
It can be very daunting.
You can't be stupid about it, because I say all that, but I have the confidence of having legal insurance. So, but
right,
I mean, well, also there, that was a conscious decision, because I knew, I mean, especially with shipping companies, they try to fuck you over every which way, always. Even if they know they are not right, they are just gambling on the fact that some people just won't put up with it and just will, you know, let a few hundred euros go. I'm just too stubborn to do that, because sometimes the effort and the time I put into it, that's where I'm not a good business person, because sometimes I put too much time into those things. And it doesn't really pay off, but I'm just too stubborn to pay something I don't have to pay.
Yeah, but you're not that. You're smart. You're much smarter than you give yourself credit for, or you're letting on, because having the ability to understand that I do have a lawyer that's squared away is a much better investment than, say, a guy who's like, I got $700, I'm just going to buy an anvil, you know?
Yeah.
And like for us, I mean, our business decisions have all been like this past year, I have spent a pile of money on our third website. This is our third website. It is extremely expensive, and we've employed a PR company they're doing great, but they're doing great, and I appreciate them, and I know how important it is to have them. But these two decisions were very expensive,
yeah.
And I'm fucking running around trying to sell stuff so we can make sure we can keep it going. And these are decisions that I know that might not look like fun, and there might not be things that I'm getting immediate return from, but I know down the line the value will be exponential.
Yeah, they are an investment. Yeah, totally. I can see that.
It's hard because it's like, I just, before I, t- the reason why I was late sending you the link is because I didn't realize I had a meeting at 2:00 with the PR company, a rundown of like what's going on and what's working, what's not working, the things that they're planning on doing for us and, you know, getting us involved. And, you know, it's like a lot of having to make decisions that are, you know, not as glamorous as, you know,
yeah.
Well, is knife making ever glamorous?
When you're drunk at the Dumb Steel event and you think you're the greatest, then it's glamorous, but the morning after wasn't so nice, so...
Oh, dude, you look like you were having such a good time.
Oh, fuck.
You look like you were having such a good time.
I made my wife so mad.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Why? Because you were hungover?
Dude, I got done being so drunk. I don't know what happened. I mean, Martin Huber was there and my booth was full and we had a nice conversation and I was just, you know, partying because I sold out. But then the alcohol, since the event was so short, the alcohol really only kicked in when the event was over. And I was coming down completely drunk and was not usable, not able to do anything until like 2 p.m. the next day. And my wife had to, you know... I have the kids alone, and I wasn't able to make food and all or cook. So yeah, she was pretty mad.
Oh my! That happened to me one time. This was before I had our daughter. We had our daughter, and I. This is a crazy story. We lived in this building, and on the top floor is a friend of mine who was the brand ambassador for Johnny Walker in the United States.
Nice.
And he was the Scottish guy, great, funny, charming. And he had, in this tiny apartment, he had cases of Johnny Walker. And his job, he would do these whiskey tastings. And he would have whiskey tastings of different single malts and different blended scotches. And he'd do these events. He'd show up in his kilt and he would be very charming and he would do these scotch tastings. So in his apartment building, there were cases of fucking... Johnny Walker, anything, all of it.
Of course.
Blue label, red label, black label, and all the single malts that were involved so we could do the tastings. So when you invite, you know, like if you get invited to a friend's house for dinner, you know, you would bring something, right? You'd bring like a bottle of wine maybe,
yeah.
That's a customary, or you bring some food, or you bring a gift or something like totally. That. You'd bring a bottle of wine. Like that was when my wife and I go to dinner, we go to someone's house, get invited to someone's house, you bring a bottle of wine. His job was to bring a bottle of Johnny Walker wherever he went. So if he got invited over for dinner at his house, he'd plop down, depending on the kind of person it was, gold label, something they don't normally drink, black label. Sometimes if it was a high-level person, he'd drop down a bottle of blue label. So he had cases of Johnny Walker in his apartment. So we were talking one night, and he asked me if I liked scotch. And I said, well, my dad, when I grew up, my dad drank Dewars.
Yeah,
and I said, I don't really know anything about scotch, frankly. And he goes, well, come upstairs, and I want to give you a scotch tasting. And I'm like, oh, great.
No,
I don't know anything about it. I don't know anything about it, and I'm not going to pretend like I have such a delicate palate. I don't know anything about it. So you go up to his apartment, and he brings out these flights of glasses. First, we're going to taste the single malt. We're going to do the Balvenie and the Lagavulin and this single malt and the single malt. I want you to taste this is the tasting. We went through the first flight, and then the second flight, and then the third flight. And before I knew it, I was blasted, completely, way more blasted than I've ever been in my life.
Yes.
And it just crept up on me. I had no idea. I wasn't planning on it. I'm not a big drinker. I'm not a shot guy either. I got rolled down the stairs, and I ended up on the couch of our apartment. I slept on the couch until 4 o'clock in the afternoon the next day.
Yeah.
And when I woke up, my wife was on the couch sitting next to me, and I was so hungover, my head fucking killed me.
Yeah.
And she just learned. She wakes up to me. She just looks at me and she says, first thing, not even good morning, anything. Like, how are you feeling? She's like, this cannot happen again. This cannot happen again. I was useless. You know, I was on the couch all day and all afternoon. And she goes, this cannot happen again. And I was like, it won't happen again. I swear to God, I fucking feel terrible. I felt terrible. And it was like, and it was the drunkest I've ever been. And I know exactly how you're feeling. And I know that disappointment that your wife had, it was gotta be bad.
Apparently I said some things when I was drunk too that weren't really charming. So
really?
Yeah. I mean, I think I was looking for some sexy time or something. So. So, yeah. But it's all right now. So. Man.
That's hilarious. Didn't go over well, I bet.
No, I thought of myself being very charming, but she didn't. Yeah. She didn't understand it quite as well.
You were charmed. I saw you in the booth. You had a big smile on your face. You were happy as a clam. I guess, you know, sometimes that, you know, that's what happens sometimes with girlfriends and boyfriends and wives and all that. It's like, you know, part of it's like she knows all about you. She knows all about it.
And I mean, we were together for so long. So.
Best chef doesn't. Yeah, didn't. Yeah, my wife didn't give a fuck about the knives at all. I mean, it's like she's had it. She's completely had it. So it's like you ain't gonna. When I won the best bread knife, I say, hey, Hale, guess what? I got the best bread knife. She goes, oh, let's say. Well, what are we doing? We got to mow the lawn now. Let's mow the lawn. Yep. I got nothing out of that. I didn't get any. There was no sexy time either after winning the best bread knife.
I argued the same. I said, well, I got drunk because I was partying because I sold out. That's a great thing for. And she wasn't
very
appreciated.
Did you mention the best cleaver?
Yeah, that. Yeah.
Didn't do anything, did it?
No. I didn't tell her that.
Didn't help you at all. Oh, well, you gotta when you're in the weeds like that, you have to throw all the water you have on the fire.
That's true.
If it's the cleaver, you gotta throw it off.
I can ask her if she would have appreciated that, but I doubt it.
Oh, God.
I don't know if she knows what a cleaver is. So
that's hilarious. Well, I do have a story. I do have one, at least one. We can see if we can do some weird news.
Totally.
But this kind of goes with what our first conversation. A pizza shop sells 60 pizza pies contaminated with THC.
By accident or on purpose?
We're going to read it. A pizzeria shop in Wisconsin apologized repeatedly after it accidentally sold 60 pizzas that were made with oil contaminated with THC. At Famous Yeti's Pizza, we're committed to the safety. Famous Yeti's Pizza, we're committed to the safety and trust of the community, and we want to provide a transparent update on the recent incident involving contaminated pizza. The owner and operator of Famous Yeti's Pizza told Fox Digital News. Ryan continued, we've been working closely with the police department in Dane County and the health department to trace the issue, which was linked to oil mistakenly used from an on-site cooperative commercial kitchen. The oil intended for another business used food-grade hemp and contained Delta 9. Both the police department and health department confirmed to Fox News that they've been working with the shop on that matter. The oil was stored properly in accordance with local guidelines, but he admitted that there should be additional safety guards. So a pizzeria accidentally... Delta 9 is a chemical found in cannabis, the most abundant form of... THC causes psychoactive reactions when consumed.
That was my next question.
while it's illegal to produce or consume cannabis in Wisconsin, including for medical reasons, products that contain Delta 9 THC derived from hemp, however, illegal according to the Wisconsin Cannabis. Moving forward, we'll no longer allow Delta 9 or related substances to be stored in our facility. Noting that he's grateful for the support of the restaurants, he's grateful for the support his restaurant has received over the past week. So,
do you think that stuff smells the same as weed does?
Here's what I'm going to tell you. Based on, I had the opportunity to have an edible that I
know that story.
This is recently.
Oh,
this
another is one.
What was the one that? What was the old one?
I think it was a story where Hillary was pretty mad.
I was having
as
a
well.
Heart attack.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, the heart attack one was recent. Was in the a couple like a month or two ago.
Yeah.
Where we were given some weed, and then I was told it might relax me, and then I took too much, and I thought I didn't know if I was having a heart attack or not. That happened.
Relaxing too much.
It was not relaxing at all. It was like, and my wife is a medical person, and if you start to get concerned about your heart,
yeah, that's
so
a problem.
We recently had some edible gummies given to us, and somebody said, "Don't worry, just take a little bit of it." And I took like I was so concerned because my wife was just like, "We're not going to have heart attack talk again, are we?" Because like after I ruined her night. That night I smoked all that weed, and then. It wasn't even that much. I just took a double hit. The problem was I was learning this breathing technique for my goddamn Peloton where you take a double inhale. You fill your lungs up and then at the top and then take another one after that. And I did that with the weed thinking that's the way. It was a giant mistake and I thought I was having a heart attack. So we recently had a gummy that was procured at a dispensary and there were instructions on the back and I was talking to a few people on how much you should take, and I was very concerned. I just wanted to just relax a little bit. I didn't really want to go on like some sort of psychedelic escapade. Yeah. And my wife immediately said to me, "We're not going to have heart attack time again, right?" And I'm like, "I don't plan on it, but what we're going to do is," I took a quarter of a gummy. Basically, like imagine a gummy bear. Yeah. Imagine the foot. Yeah. I took the fucking foot, right? So it was like less than, I mean, I took a quarter of this fucking gummy.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you this. The flavor was like, I couldn't believe how much it tasted like weed. So I'm imagining, and I these are, you know, you feel chill, and I watched the Knicks game, and I started to get drowsy, and I went to sleep, and I obviously didn't take enough for there to be like a giant reaction or something like that, and there was no heart attack talk. All of a sudden I hear, how's the heart? And I'm like, fine, goddammit. Everything's fine. But what I was surprised at was how much it tasted like weed. Like, it was like such a concentrated weed taste.
Yeah.
There was it was completely 100% indescribable as being anything other than weed.
Yeah.
Like if you tasted it, you'd be like, "Oh my god, this is definitely weed."
So smell as
if
well.
If I had a slice of pizza with the weed oil, I cannot imagine that it wouldn't taste like weed.
No, taste, but did it smell as well, the gummy bear?
I didn't smell it.
Huh.
When we opened the bag smelled like weed.
Because I wonder if it could be an accident. That's the only thing. Because if the person who, you know, was thinking they were taking olive oil and had the weed oil instead of it, and it didn't smell, I don't know if that stuff smells. I never had that. And gummy bears, I never had either.
I once years ago, back in the college days, we had a friend who had cancer, was dealing with cancer, and we decided to make some weed brownies for that person.
Yeah.
Because they could, you know, were really in it. It fucking, when you cook the butter and put the weed in it, everything always, it always smells like weed.
Yeah.
You know, like the gummies, definitely, there was no mistaking. You know, like if you had like a closed, if you had an open jar and it was regular gummy bears, and then you had another one and it was the weed gummy bears, there wouldn't be a question. You know exactly what it is.
But I mean, then we can conclude that it couldn't have been an accident in the pizzeria.
That's what I think. I don't believe, because I think the pizzeria was he said it was a co-op. So there's no question in my mind that somebody wouldn't notice that it was weed.
Yeah.
Not a question of my mind.
Yeah. Huh.
So that one little quarter of a piece of gummy was so much. It was like crazy. Just this, a quarter of a gummy is like, it's not even the size of a pencil eraser.
Yeah, no.
But it was like powerful, of full of weed.
I mean, you always read that stuff gets stronger and stronger, especially now where it's commercialized. But I just wonder who and why would you do that? Because it's not even really funny. If you do that with your friends, maybe it's funny. But if that pizzeria gets eaten by some kid, that maybe not so good.
I had a story for a friend of mine told me, and I was talking about the weed gummy, and they said to me, they ruined a party, or they had a weekend event, and they bought edibles, and then they said it was, you know, every gummy was like a certain amount of milligrams, whatever the milligrams was. I think that 5 milligrams is like a gummy is like 5 milligrams, and like half of them, you know, yeah. My friend was just like, I would stick to 2 mil. I don't want to pretend like I know anything, but like, I'm starting to like learn it. But at the same time, I'm like, I don't give a shit. They were saying that, you know, they misread the label, and each gummy was 26 milligrams, and they should have only had 5 milligrams. So everyone at this fucking party were bombed and freaking out. They were like
paranoid,
freaking out. Oh, everything. It was the worst. And my friend said, I ruined the weekend because I accidentally gave everyone way too much weed, like way too much. I mean, it was like, she said, I ruined relationships, and it was an accident. I didn't realize. I read the package wrong. I said, all right, just have everybody have a gummy. It's only 5 milligrams. Everyone got 26 milligrams, and they were like out of their fucking minds. Weekend was ruined. Relationships were ruined. And I would think if you're spritzing on cannabis oil all over the pizza, you're killing people.
Yeah. I mean,
you're fucking killing people.
That with the party doesn't get me as concerned. I find that funny because even though relationships were destroyed, it's all grown-ups, and the situation as a spectator, I imagine that to be immensely funny. But with the...
I think they were in the terror dome.
Yeah, yeah.
Frankly, I thought it was like...
I imagine myself...
I don't think it was fun at all.
I imagine myself standing there not being paranoid and just watching that, and that's pretty... I mean, yeah. But with the pizzeria, I don't know. Why would you do that? What's the motivation? I don't know. I can't imagine a reasonable thing that would justify that.
I remember I went to a pizza place a couple weeks ago with my college roommate. My college roommate was in town. We went to a pizzeria, and we were with his girlfriend and my wife, and we were telling the old stories and stuff like that. And I was saying, do you remember when the first time I ever and only did psychedelic mushrooms was with him?
Yeah.
And I said to him, like, do you remember that? He goes, yeah, that was the first time I ever did mushrooms. I said, you told me that you had done them before. Like, nah, I had never done them before. And I said, and you told me to just take a stem, and the stem was enough. And he's like, yeah, I didn't really know. I said, you fucking destroyed us. He's like, yeah, I know. I realized that after the fact. And he was remembered that day of us being just like, and he started, I mean, he said, it was so... We ate so much mushrooms, and we were so out of our fucking minds that he remembers that day. Anyway, he's 52 as well. He remembers that day from 30 years ago, like it was yesterday. He's like, I've embedded that day in my head, yeah. And I can't even. We saw a helicopter. We were throwing a frisbee, and there were helicopters flying over, and we ran in the woods because we thought that the helicopters were after us. And we were all. I mean, he was recounting the story, and I was just like, I've never really done drugs since then. I've never done psychedelics again, and I'm just like, it was such a bad experience. And I would think that if somebody did that to me accidentally, I would be, it would destroy me. Like if I had a slice of pizza, and you're not going to eat one slice of pizza.
Yeah,
by the way,
no.
How many slice? You get a slice if you get pizza at home. How many slices are you eating?
The whole pizza.
Oh, no, but I mean, like, it's you and your family. Let's say you get a pie for you and your family. How many slices are you eating? You're not eating one.
I'm getting several pizzas for me and my family.
Yeah, so how many slices you
eat? Oh, I mean, that's like I'm cutting it into eight and I'm eating eight. I'm eating one pizza.
I'm cutting it into eight and eating eight.
Yeah.
You're eating the whole pie. And then it's covered in fucking weed oil and then you're out of your goddamn
mind. Yeah, 100%. I would be dead. I mean, because I'm greedy.
That would be bad. That makes you kind of like nervous about like future ordering in.
Yeah.
What if that happened? Because it's very, I'm telling you this, that little goddamn gummy that we have, we split into fucking quarters. It was potent enough that a quarter of it, I felt, you know, Hillary says, how do you feel? I said, I'm glad I don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, that it wasn't like, I don't feel like I want to, if somebody said, all right, we're going out to a party. I'm like, there is no way. There ain't no way. So it's like a whole pizza. I mean, you forget it.
Yeah, especially if that stuff is potent. I don't know. I mean, but as long as it works out and everything is all right, I think it's a nice story to tell them maybe, but you never know upfront, so maybe.
I think there's going to be a lot more of these stories coming up. I think that the growth of these psychedelics and different kinds of weeds we're going to be hearing a lot more of these stories.
Yeah.
And it's going to be...
It could also be some sabotage going on. Maybe a driver, you know?
Yeah, it could have been. Somebody could have been stupid. I mean, there's a very good chance that somebody was just stupid. I mean, that stupidity happens, but I tend to think that this was an on purpose situation.
Yeah, totally. Maybe a driver fucking over his boss or being mad at him.
60. Yeah, 60 pizzas, though. That's a lot of oil.
True. It must have been expensive as well.
Holy mackerel. Well, can you imagine? Oh, my God.
But if you're coming into it from a mindset of maybe damaging your boss, but not killing anyone, that might be the way to go. Because everyone will feel it, but I don't think, other than getting heart attacks, you can really die from it.
Well, but I mean, people can sue.
Yeah,
I mean,
no, I'm sure.
You.
I'm
I mean,
sure.
It's. I mean, you. I mean, there are stories of like, you hear stories of like these kids who are like putting like acid in their teacher's coffee and stuff like that and stuff like that. And you know, the thought of that is like,
yeah. But I think on that stuff you can overdose. I'm not entirely sure, but it's similar to alcohol. I mean, the first time I got drunk with my friends was when I was 13, and we didn't even know what we were doing. Really, we had no clue. We only knew grown-ups were drinking alcohol, and we went into the next store, bought the cheapest wine, every one of us 1 liter, and axed that shit. It was horrible. And then we went to the, gymnastics class afterwards. So there was time spent between school, around lunch time. And we were just thinking, yeah, we will be funny like the grown-ups or something like that. And we were dead as drunk. But what I'm trying to say is we were little. And if we, I mean, you could totally die on that shit.
So you were 13, you were drunk?
Yeah, that was my first...
Oh, did you throw up?
Not just once. In front of the teacher. And that...
What'd you say? Hmm? Your father was a teacher?
No, in front of our teacher. And we were playing football. Gymnastic might be the wrong term, but, you know...
Gym class. You guys were, I know.
Yeah, running and football playing. And we were outside, it was summer, right? And we were throwing up. Teacher was seeing it. He didn't care.
I didn't care.
No, that was the kind of teacher who was putting coffee in his rum, not the other way around. So he didn't give a fuck. We were mostly on our own as well, you know, organizing the football game ourselves and all that. Usually that was fun because the teacher wasn't around and that was okay. In that case, a teacher wouldn't have been a bad idea who would have, you know, called our parents to get us. He then let us drive home with public transportation, and we had... We later recognized that we made several runs on one bus, you know, driving all through Vienna until we came to the same spot again, because it was dark when we were waking up in the bus.
Oh my God!
And then my mother just, I was coming home. She was worried already because I should have been home long by then. And she just asked me.
And you passed out drunk on a fucking school, on a city bus.
Totally, totally. At 13.
Oh my God.
She was just asking, and I mean, as you know, being a parent myself, I now recognize how much, you know, how much, for one, she was worried, but how smart she was. She was just asking if I took any pills or what I did. I told her it was alcohol. She put me in the bed, trying to get my father off of my little ass because he was he was really mad.
Furious. Oh my God.
And then at the next day we had a talk.
Oh God, what a terrible talk to have. You don't know any better.
No, we didn't know, but still, I mean, we knew it was prohibited. We knew it was something wrong to do, you know, but we honestly, and that's funny because we just drank the fucking alcohol because grown-ups did it, and yeah. We knew they were getting kind of funny, and we knew they were getting drunk, but we didn't know what that meant, and we were right. I mean, we were drinking it like juice. I think I almost drank 1 liter. It was just a little bit in. A friend of mine drank 1 liter, and another friend as well. And yeah, pretty bad.
Oh my God. Don't tell your kids that story. They're going to think, look how happy my dad is. Look how happy he is. He comes down and he's all happy. Let's be like dad. Don't do it.
They don't understand English and they're asleep. So don't worry.
All right. Perfect. Perfect. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm very fortunate. My daughter in high school, when she was probably 13, her friends got incredibly high.
Yeah.
And it made everybody nervous. And then the teacher found out, and then the kid got expelled. And Lyle and I had a long conversation about it because she was like, I didn't know what was wrong with him. And I had to kind of explain, she was younger than 12, but younger than 13, but I had to explain it all. And it was like, we had to have some real serious conversations about what can happen. And like, a lot of her friends in college, I mean, when you're in college, there are no parents around, you know, you're in the safety of the sanctity of the campus, and you're all together, all these young kids are together, and none of them are drinking. They're all doing drugs. They're all doing ketamine and all this crazy shit. And, you know, she's not a teetotaler, but she understands. I gave her a piece of advice. When she turned 18, we went to Spain to teach that. I taught that class at Florentine. Yeah. And I said to her mother, I said, listen, before she gets to college, she and I got to have a drink. And I'll tell you why. Because she needs to at least know what the hell's going on. And we went to this beach type bar, and I got her whatever she wanted, and she started getting drunk. And I said, I got to tell you this. When you get to college, you got to act like you've been here before. I said, you can't be bombed. And we had long conversations about it. And I said, because I know what it's like.
Yeah.
And I said, you just got to be real careful because you can be put in this position where you don't have control and you don't want to be taken advantage of in a position where you're out of control. And it was really a scary conversation, but at the same time, it was like really, really important.
It's interesting that you think about that as a man, because I don't have daughters, but I would have never thought about that part. But it's true. I mean, now that you say it, it's very apparent.
It's like, you know, you gotta have your senses about her, and she's smart, and she's you know, she and I have had a few. Actually, when I went out to I went to visit her, and she was like tired and she was exhausted. But at the same time, she had a roommate. She has no real place to be by herself. I said she was stressed a little bit. I said, I got a great idea. Let's go to the hotel room. We'll watch baseball. I get a 6-pack of beer. And that's what we did. I got a 6-pack of beer. She just laid down on the bed and we drank some beer and we ate some chips and we bullshitted. And she's not of age, but at the same time, I'm like, I also kind of wanted her to, not be, you know, kind of understand that of tolerance and understand that not do the wrong thing and when's enough enough. And It was...
I think that's the point. I think you can do things like that. My parents were the same, and I'm aspiring to be like that a little, not loose, but you know, have fun, but with limits, and explain where the limits are. So my parents always instilled in me some principles, like don't take any hard drugs, like don't take any pills. For them, weed and alcohol more or less was always okay. Not at 13, of course, but they didn't mind it as much because they knew hard drugs, like I don't know, shooting shit up or taking some pills, that was off limits. And they pretty early instilled that in me, not by force, but by explaining that you can die real fast with that shit. And I think it is the case. I mean, as you see nowadays with fentanyl especially, but I think back then it was with overdosing, it was always a possibility with those kind of drugs. And I'm not mad about that. But on the other hand, they were relatively loose with the alcohol, and I don't think that's a bad thing either. If you tell your children what is good or bad, or you know, if you instill limits in them as well.
It's tough. And I tell you, in my situation, my father told me, you know, he was very strict about everything. My parents were divorced. My dad was just like, don't do this. And that was the end of it.
Yeah.
Don't get anyone pregnant. And he used to say, getting drunk is for low lives. That's what he would say. Only low lives get drunk. And then my mother, who grew up with two brothers who drank a lot, she would just get me beer because she didn't want me to leave and go out on the streets of New York. Yeah. So I always had beer. And it was like, part of me is thinking that it's not the best thing in the world either. So,
yeah, it would be worse if you were an alcoholic now. So,
definitely would be way worse. I mean, it's like I at this point, I'm about to be 51. I like, my favorite narcotic is sleep. So I like, part of me is like, I'm trying to figure out how much seltzer water I can drink before it wakes me up in the middle of the night. That's like the real, it is no longer about how many milligrams of THC I can take. It's like, what's my threshold for being able to sleep the night without having to go to the bathroom? That's my real scientific drug of choice. Sleep.
It's not unhealthy.
Not unhealthy. Ben, come on. Come on, Knives. What's next for you, my man?
I'm in the middle of a big production run of Knives, 60 Knives. I'm thinking of you all the time doing them because, you know, big runs. Guy. So
do it. I'm so excited. Guys, get on to Ben's newsletter. If you go to come_on_knives on Instagram, and there's a link, the Come On Knives on his website. Definitely get involved. Ben is the man. Number one, he's number one of the best knife makers in the world. But two, he likes to tell a dick joke. My man is here, and we didn't do any. I'm gonna have to get you back sooner rather than later because we didn't get to any real weird news.
Yeah, crazy. Let's record an episode just weird news.
Okay, well, that's it. Next time you're here, only weird news. We won't fuck around. Yeah. We won't talk about anything. We've covered everything.
We'll blab them off.
This is part one. The part two will be only weird news. Ben, thank you once again for being here.
You are terminated.
All right. You did it. You did it. All right, guys. We'll see you next week. Thanks again.
Bye.
How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with GEICO feels just like that. Get more with GEICO.